Welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast series by Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I'm Giuseppe Porcaro, and today we will discuss about Europe's worst energy price crisis in recent years. I'm here with Simone Tagliapietra and George Zachman, both senior fellows here at Bruegel. Hi, Simone. Hi, Jörg.
Hello.
Hi.
Together, we will try to understand better the roots of the current crisis, analyzing the responses and the challenges that all these may pose to the overall climate agenda in the European Union. Wholesale natural gas and electricity prices have hit repeated records in the last month, forcing EU government to prepare billions in emergency aid to help households hit with higher bills. First of all, Simone, Georg, you just published a blog about this, and we are linking it up in the show notes so that our listeners can get back to it and read properly. But explain us, why are we in that situation? And is Europe's gas and electricity price surge a one-off?
Well, I think this is indeed the big question we are all facing now. So first of all, Georg and I have made clear in the blog that this is the result of a sum of very unfortunate conditions. It is really a sort of perfect storm made by very different elements coming together at the same time. So, for example, look at the natural gas market situation. Last winter, it was very cold in Europe. Gas demand for the residential heating was up 8% vis-a-vis the previous year, and that was the first factor. Then it happened that the summer we had was very hot, the demand for air conditioning was very high, and therefore electricity demand was high, and the demand for gas went up also for this reason, because at the very same time, the CO2 price in Europe went up, favoring a coal to gas switch. At the same time, the economic recovery pushed the energy demand of the industrial sector, further strengthening the gas demand. At the same time, wind output in Europe was lower than usual due to a very poor windy season in the continent. Therefore, the sum of these very different weather-related or economic-related elements brought the gas market in a very tight situation, which is further enhanced by the fact that we have problems on the supply side. The problems are that, notably, Russia is not sending all the volumes Europe would currently need to refill the storages ahead of the winter season. This is not to say that Russia is not complying with the contractual obligation it has. Russia is complying with the contractual obligation it has so far, but is not making, let's say, an additional effort to send molecules over to Europe at a time of need. And this situation was also made clear yesterday, you know, when the International Energy Agency published a written statement on the current situation, highlighting the fact that Russia can do more to support Europe and to show that it is a reliable supplier. But the problem is that Nord Stream 2 has been built now. Russia would like to have the authorization to start flowing the molecules through the pipe. So many observers think that Russia is using this situation to show that, first, natural gas is important for Europe, Russian supplies are important for Europe, Nord Stream 2 is important for Europe.
Indeed, Simone, and the situation is essentially amplified by the fact that global gas markets are also empty at the moment. So we see economic recovery not only in Europe, but also in other parts of the world. Therefore, gas demand in the US went up, gas demand in Asia went up, and therefore the typical wild card of European gas supplies, liquefied natural gas, is not really available at the moment. So that gives the Russian suppliers significantly more leverage, and whether they are just doing that to exercise their market power and kind of get the last amount of high prices that they can get out of the system, or whether they are using that to actually try to blackmail us for the certification of Nord Stream 2, can probably never be told. But we are in a situation where Russian gas supplies have been below levels in the past years. Even so, last year was a year of recession in Europe, and the storages, especially those storages that are owned by Gazprom itself, are not full ahead of the winter, and that essentially makes that that European markets have anticipated a crisis coming up. So currently, there is enough gas for everybody, of course, but the markets are doing what they are supposed to do. They are anticipating, and they are anticipating that if the winter gets cold and if there is not a significant uptick in terms of supplies from external suppliers, there will be a gas crunch. And accordingly, prices have skyrocketed, which will have some positive effects in terms of rationing demand, because people will now think twice about heating or think twice about industrial production, and therefore that will markets will essentially help us to sustain a crisis in winter. But these high prices have immediate social consequences that Simone and I wrote about in the blog.
Okay, thank you for this overview, which is very useful to understand and navigate the situation. I have a first follow-up question to Georg, because Russia has been, of course, mentioned all over the place by both of you. You mentioned Nord Stream 2, and some of our listeners might not be familiar about what's really the problem over there. Of course, hearing it like that, there is an empty pipeline which is not being used, and there is a gas crisis. What's going on over there?
Well, the matter of fact is that there's not one empty pipeline, but there are several empty pipelines at the moment. So what is actually happening is that that Russia is not using the pipelines that are existing and certified, like the gas transit through Ukraine or the gas transit through Belarus at full capacity. So they are not sending as much gas as Europeans would like to get through those existing pipelines. And then on top of that, they indeed just finalized the technical tests of Nord Stream 2. So this second branch of the Nord Stream pipeline is now ready and waiting for certification. The certification has to come from the German regulator. Typically, it should be more like a technical legal assessment. But in a situation of crisis, there might also be some political pressure being exercised in order to get this certification. And there have been statements from the Russian government saying that, well, if Nord Stream 2 were there, then more gas would flow. Now, there are two interpretations of that. One technical interpretation that some Gazprom-friendly sources are claiming that essentially the Russian supply system has two sources, one further north and one further south, and the further north sources are not entirely utilized and can then flow through Nord Stream 2, while the sources further south in Siberia are kind of unavailable at the moment, and therefore the transit through Ukraine is not possible. But the other explanation would be that that this is just a way of kind of pushing for the certification of Nord Stream 2, which sounds rather plausible to me.
So my other question, which was kind of related, if there is not a lack of gas in general, and that is a contingent situation, the crisis that we are seeing at the moment seems to be a contingent crisis, or Am I wrong? You have this in the title of your blog. Is this a one-off issue, or are we seeing something that it's more long-term and therefore more worrying, I would say, for everyone?
This is indeed the important question, that policymakers have to address. And if you look at the gas markets, so if you look at the futures, for example, on the Dutch gas hub, which is the main one in Europe, you see that after the winter, the price, the future price, is actually back to the normal levels. So it means that markets themselves expect this situation to be temporary and to basically end with the winter. So this is the signal you get from the futures in the market. And this is also what you would naturally think given the current sum of circumstances we previously discussed. Now, the oil and gas industry is certainly saying at this moment, we told you. All these emphasize on the green transition and all these calls not to invest anymore on oil and gas will inevitably lead to a bumpy transition as we move forward. Now, these calls for governments to understand the temporal duration of this crisis, also to understand what are the long-term fixes, because here it is clear that in the short term, governments have a role to play in intervening by basically providing support to the most vulnerable. So as Georg said, this situation in the short term has a social impact because the energy prices, so the energy bills of families go up immediately. So there is a high case for governmental intervention to take care of the most vulnerable in our societies through energy vouchers, by cutting VAT on energy prices, etc. But then there is the long-term question. So what can we do in order to prevent these situations to become the new normal in Europe? And there, the answer we give, and I think also the European Commission has been given so far, is we need to accelerate the green transition. Because the more renewables we have into the system, the being renewables the cheapest option for electricity generation, the less we will encounter such a situation. And the less we will be dependent on natural gas, which is accounting today for, let's say, 80% of the situation. Because when people at the beginning, namely, started to blame the green transition for the current situation, well, the rise in CO2 price only account for what? 20% of the current surge in energy prices. The remaining is due to the fundamentals in the gas markets mainly. So we need to be very clear about this point. And I think there is a high case here to support the fact that the investing in renewables and energy efficiency is the way to go. And in Europe, this mainly entails a quick adoption of the Fit for 55 and the related measures on renewables and energy efficiency.
But wait a second, Simone, because it's not that I want to be the contrarian voice here, far from my thinking in terms of green transition, but it seems that in a lot of comments that we are seeing in the past few days, and also in the reactions at national level, there is potentially a fear that actually things like Fit for 55 are exactly what we don't need in this moment. So your argumentation seems to be pretty logic and supported by the evidence of the logic and of research. But how we can convince governments or people that actually the green transition that is being proposed at the European level at the moment is going to work in the right way and not creating this bumpy road that you were discussing and you were, introducing as a possibility.
Yeah, maybe if I may jump in with a proposal that Simone and I did a few years ago, somewhat buffering this bumpy road in terms of security of supply. But because as Simone described, I mean, we are now in a horse race between phasing out brown and phasing in green. And depending on which horse is faster or slower, the prices will either be high or low. Now, what we were proposing at the time is that we create a separate instrument for security of supply. And this separate instrument for security of supply would essentially encourage European consumers of fossil fuels to make sure that they are always having enough stockpiles available. And that would avoid a situation that in a phase out of the brown technologies, we would become too dependent on the last remaining monopolists in this market. And I hope you can put it in the show notes as well. But I think if we would have had this proposal being implemented by now, this situation with an anticipation of a winter gas crunch would not be around, because market participants would have been essentially encouraged to store much more gas in Europe, even so at slightly higher prices earlier on, but that would have avoided the critical situation. And maybe a second statement. I think in general terms, we also should not start to kill now our energy markets here in Europe. I mean, there are now calls about, yes, the energy prices go up, and that's having so many consequences, but as I said before, the high energy prices are in anticipation of a potential crunch in winter, and they are providing the signals to suppliers to bring in more gas from other parts of the world. Norway, for example, announced that they are increasing production. And they are also a signal to those non-essential consumers to reduce potentially their consumption. So if we don't have price signals, we don't get the right signals for rationing the amounts of gas that we might need in winter to keep our homes warm. So therefore, policymakers should not tinker with the price signal itself, but with the consequences of the price signal on households.
But if I may add on that, and Giuseppe, also turn again to your question, there are indeed some MEPs that have been vocal these days saying, you see, this is the situation affecting families now. That's exactly the reason why we should not have the new ETS on road transport and buildings. But frankly speaking, I find this argument to be extremely weak, if not even not really rational from an intellectual perspective, because the current situation is totally unprecedented. The gas price in Europe has multiplied by a factor of 4 since January, basically, okay? So the impact of this surge in wholesale prices on the bills is way higher than the impact than the new ETS that has been proposed by the Commission would have on our energy bills starting in, let's say, 2026 and only progressively and slowly going up year after year in order to have a smooth introduction of the system. So the two things are just not comparable, and using this situation for political purposes to, you know, either go against the green transition or certain elements of the Fit for 55, I think it doesn't really help to have a clear and honest debate about the kind of decarbonization measures we need.
But in the meantime, you know, the electricity bill is going up, so there are some short-term measures that have been put in place by national governments. What is your assessment of what is being done on that level by, you know, the Spanish, the Italians are following? I mean, what's going on there?
Well, what we can say is that the Spanish government has certainly intervened in a much heavy way to tackle this situation. While France, for example, has mainly intervened by deciding to extend the regime of energy vouchers given to the most vulnerables to amplify the spectrum of people that are benefiting from these. I think they used to be 5.5 million. Now they will basically add other 2 million people there, probably. Italy is considering a cut in the VAT in the energy sector, while the Spanish government has really decided to strongly intervene into the utilities and really therefore intervene into the market functioning and try to take resources from utilities, give them back to the citizens. But in prospect give back again these resources to the utility. So it's like a temporary intervention that was designed there. Now, we don't want, I think, here to discuss the individual choices, but certainly we can say that the most important thing at this very moment in time is to protect the most vulnerable. So probably specific interventions oriented at this social dimension is what government should really be focusing on, and not compromising with quick actions, integrity of markets and market functionings that could, in the longer run, prevent investments to flow into green assets as they used to be and as we need in order to have our climate targets delivered.
Do you think that we can also be trapped in this game, and energy companies might play this as a leverage in order not to be, you know, legitimately not to be damaged, but played it as a leverage in that situation, and trying to keep their positions in the market, in a market that, as we said before, is going to change and transition?
I mean, it's a legitimate question, and the energy market is a very peculiar one, because you have large long-term investments that you are conducting, and those investments sometimes only pay back in situations of scarcity, and then the right scarcity price is extremely difficult to determine. So if you're investing in some type of flexible capacity that is only supposed to run a few hours per year, then in those very few hours, you need to essentially make the money that pays all the capital cost for it. And it's extremely difficult to tell what is a market-based and competitive price here, and at which price level you're essentially just seeing a massive exercise of market power and transfer of wealth from consumers to companies. So I agree with you that that competition authorities should also always observe what is going on and try to prevent situations where potentially market participants are withholding capacities in order to increase the scarcity. But we should not kind of fall into a kind of a purely populist narrative and say that this is necessarily the case. It's very difficult to tell apart what the situation is. It needs careful analysis. But if the careful analysis is there and it's showing a smoking gun here, then also action should be taken. Maybe one more word on the commercial situation. What we observe in many countries is that we have encouraged the existence of suppliers which don't have own production assets, especially on the electricity side, but also on the gas side. And those suppliers, they are typically selling long-term contracts to consumers for a year or 3 years with fixed prices. And then they very often buy their gas and electricity on the spot market or on shorter-term markets. And what we are now observing, especially in the UK, but potentially also in other markets, is that this is a very, very difficult time for these suppliers. It's essentially like shortening the market what they have been doing, and they now have a double trouble, because on the one hand, if the winter is cold, they will have especially high demand, but if the winter is cold, they will also see that prices will be extremely high. And we might see a situation where this segment of the market is largely annihilated, and that is a question also for the financial industry on how to deal with that.
Maybe because we are going towards the end of these episodes quite soon, a final word on Europe. You know, we touched upon the side effects on Europe 55 package. We touched upon the general reaction from national government. what the European Union can play out in this situation. What's to be expected? We know that the ministers responsible for energy and environment met in Slovenia, and that this is like kind of crisis mode that seems to be perceived also in the policy circles in Brussels. So what can Europe do?
Well, I think that Europe can work on the long-term fixes. So basically work on preventing such situations to become the new normal. And that can, as I said before, only be done by speeding up the decarbonization process and really try to really foster the uptake of renewables, energy efficiency and flexibility solutions required. What could be done, I think, from a legislative proposal perspective, was done before the summer with the Fit for 55. And from a financial perspective, so financial support perspective, has been done with the recovery plan and the decision to allocate 37% of the recovery plan to climate action that, as we have seen in the Bruegel tracker of the recovery plans being proposed by the countries, mainly entail investments into buildings energy efficiency, into renewable energy and smart grids. So this is what Europe can do, in my view. The short-term interventions to cover and to protect the most vulnerable, etc., need to be done at the national level and should be done at the national level because each individual country has its own peculiarities. And therefore, the national level is the level at which these kind of interventions should and can be made.
I fully agree with Simone. I would go one step further, maybe saying that the European Commission, as guardian of the treaty, should make sure that that this situation is not used to throw the baby out with the bathwater and to get rid of rules that were essentially quite useful in the past. And what on a European level can be done potentially more is to synchronize the communication and also the coordination of action in order to kind of not have one country that that is excessively generous and potentially uses tools that are not in line with the European rules and ideas of a market. Rather than kind of coming together and say, okay, this is a crisis that comes from outside to us. We are here having developing the longer term solutions to it. And in the short term, these things like lump sum transfers to most vulnerable people are encouraged and liked, but please don't tinker with the market itself.
Thank you. Thank you, Georg. And unfortunately, our time is up, but I would like to thanks both of you again for this very informative conversation, which for sure is going to help our listeners to navigate through the flow of information and also, I'd say, worry that that we are seeing in those weeks around that issue that impacts everyone. So we get to the end of these episodes, and I invite you to read the blog post that Simone and Georg just wrote on the topic of the electricity price surge, where you can find more data about what we just discussed. And as usual, you can read in open access all the analysis by our scholars on our website, www.bruegel.org. Thanks a lot for joining The Sound of Economics. Until next time, bye-bye.